What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is June 6th, and yes, we are going to talk about baseball. I do have to apologize. I was not feeling well yesterday. My whole day just got messed up, and then I had to put out fires when I woke up, which was later than usual because I was feeling so bad, so on and so forth, and it meant that the podcast did not come out. So go read the roundup. If you have any questions about those takes and everything, let me know. But we are going to talk about yesterday's games, and boy, oh boy, Jesus Luzardo, dealing with a loose cannon. If you haven't seen the graphic of the roundup, you really need to check it out. Justin Paredes absolutely killed it with this one. And he went 2.1 innings of 800 runs, 9 hits, 2 walks, and 2 strikeouts. This was right after doing this against the Brewers for 12 earned runs, and as you've probably heard, his ERA has changed from 2.15 to 4.46 across those two starts. So what happened here against the Jays? Well, first and foremost, the Jays are a very good left-handed team, and I neglected to realize that beforehand, and I should have known. And I probably should have said, you know what, let's just take one off because it's such a good lefty versus lefty lineup and making sure that everything is okay. I was like, you know what, that was very strange of a start against the Brewers, and it was. Let's do this again. And watching this one, good news, velocity is still there. He's still kind of throwing strikes with the changeup. I didn't love the four-seamer. I didn't love the sweeper. I didn't love they used sliders a lot. And really, this is a mix of not having the best rhythm that he's had. We saw a couple starts before that weren't so bad from Luzardo. And I remember actually saying, hey, look, normally those are going to be 5-run run, 6-run run games, but he's making it 3-run run games. He's finding a way through them. I'm more confident in Luzardo now that he won't have those massive blowups that we've seen from previous seasons. And of course, what did he do? 20-run runs in 2 games. So the way we handle this is we sit him against the Cubs next, and then we expect him to have his ebbs and flows. He should be better. He really should. It's not a season-defining moment. It's not injury. It's not tipping. This was a game of a sweeper getting hit out by Bo Bichette, some bad fastballs and changeups, and so it goes, kind of. Also, Trey Turner, come on, you gotta catch that ball better. You can't just basket catch that when you have so much time. You know better than that. But yeah, I mean, it's not really much more than that. And baseball is baseball. 4 runs can happen very, very quickly. And this turned into 8. So it goes. All right. You should hold on to him. Do not buy low necessarily. Like, treat him like a cherry bomb. He'll probably be around 30 on the list next week, around like the Flaherty levels. You have Max Fried, ace is going to ace against the Guardians, nothing to say there. Noah Cameron did well against the Cardinals, but it wasn't with a lot of strikeouts, it was good command focused. And the situation with him is that he's going to stay in the rotation after not getting demoted yesterday. This was a doubleheader where they had an extra man, they had to demote someone after, and you could have been Noah Cameron, that would have an extra reliever, an extra utility guy, but no. They instead decide to demote someone else, which means that Cameron's going to stick around for the next start. And with Reagan's not looking good, that game, I can pretty much quickly say, like, okay, he was bad and his velocity dropped suddenly. And yeah, he's clearly still going through something. And I don't know what the Royals are going to do, but you can't start him against the Yankees next. And you also have Chris Bubich, who's likely getting his next start skipped. So you have this purgatory of like, all right, you know what, Cameron, you're going to make at least one more start. And we're going to see what our situation is then. We don't want to blow through these options. We're going to utilize this opportunity to give Bubich some rest, etc. There's also Michael Lorenzen, who we don't really know is very good or not. He might go back to the pen. So I think Cameron ultimately does stay in this rotation. The thing is, though, Noah Cameron's going to be getting the Yankees, at least hosting the Athletics, not going to Sacre Verde, and then going to the Padres, and then the Dodgers, hosting the Dodgers, and that's not good. I don't know if I want Cameron for that. The only one I'd really consider Cameron for is the Athletics in questionable. Like, it's going to be a probable, I think, for the Athletics hosting them, and then a questionable start for the Padres. And the others, I mean, do not start really. I mean, I guess I'll have a questionable for the Yankees and the Dodgers right now, but like, I don't really want to do that. And so I don't feel like you have to. If you can sell them, do that. I don't think you really can. But yeah, it's not a situation that I feel as if I need to get Noah Cameron now and hold on to it. So it's a really tough one. If you have if it's a roster crunch, Noah Cameron is actually okay to let loose. I know I'm saying that right now, and I really hope it doesn't bite me later, but it just doesn't quite add up. When he doesn't have the ult, it's so overwhelmingly command-focused, and I don't like doing that for rookies. Drew Pomerantz opened for Colin Ray, who went 5.1 innings of 0 runs, 5 hits, and 1 walk, and 0 strikeouts. How am I supposed to buy my bread with this? We got the streaming victory against the Nationals. He goes against the Phillies next. I'm not doing that. But he gets a good matchup after, if he's still around, which he should be, I think. And maybe we'll go for that one. But yeah, just put him back to the wire for now. We'll see later. And Chris Bassett against the Phillies had a good game. Even though he went 50% strikes on the curveball, it was 5 over 20 whiffs, which is cool. He's a 15-team Toby, and I think in your 12-teamers, you don't really need to hold on to this. I was actually scouring the wire in one of my 12-teamers where there were... I don't understand why, but Will Warren was out there and Shane Baz. These are all like things I can get off the wire. Griffin Canning. I actually added Griffin Canning, guys. I know. Crazy. But that's really the league that I assess what is going on. And it's a pretty competitive league. It's not the PL Legacy ones, my hometown. And you can really get a good understanding of just general feelings of pitchers in that one. And if I'm able to do things in those leagues, I think a lot of you actually are able to in your 12-teamers. You have Jack Leiter against the Rangers. Sorry, against the Rays as a Ranger, of course. 5 innings, 1 run, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 6 Ks. Four-seam was really good upstairs, and the sinker went 13 for 15 strikes with a hit, but 2 outs in play and a lot of foul balls, but that's good. It would set up the slider, but the slider wasn't really good. It was upper half, and it's just so frustrating. Like, Jack Leiter's four-seamer is amazing, and all he's ever needed was to locate it upstairs and then have a really good secondary, hopefully two, underneath it. He's got the command of it, and then come on, slider. Come on, changeup. Come on, curveball. Something. Cutter, whatever. Help him out here. Now, I think the sinker is also making things better, too. So I'm all for that. Mitch Spence against the Twins. 5 innings, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 4 Ks. He went 57 pitches. And I almost gave him the gold star. Someone else, I think, was just more obvious. But this is awesome. That's great. You average, what, like 10 pitches, 11 pitches per inning. That's cool. However, you're at 92 on the cutter. You only threw 57 pitches, and we don't really know if you're going to stick around or not. And you're going to get the Angels, who are a right-handed heavy lineup, and that maybe does play into the cutter slider. Oh, and by the way, in curve that he's throwing, which is cool. But yeah, I don't think this is it for Spence, especially considering that the low pitch count's coming, the slower velocity, and it's just not really the time to jump in. Framber Valdez, oh my gosh, against the Pirates. He's just been so good lately. And I kind of want to give him the aces going to ace tag, even though I know that there will be a drop off again, but I don't really care. 7 innings, 200 runs, 4 hits, 3 walks, and 11 strikeouts. 23 whiffs for a Gallows pull. That's awesome. Got the win against the Pirates. 18 for 45 whiffs on the curve. 49% CSW on that pitch. If you remember the second half of last year that saved his season, it was the curveball doing this. Now against the Pirates, a little bit of blame on the Pirates there, sure, but... he's really rectified the, first 4 or 5 starts of the year that were just so bad and made everyone forget, like, the 4-3 ERA and the 130-plus whip. Yeah, it's just completely gone now. Sean Burke against the Tigers. 7 innings, 200 runs, 7 hits, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts. 93.7 on the fastball, not 95-plus that we saw last year, but the curve stepped up. 35% CSW. And the slider, yeah, it hugged outside, really glove side to right-handers. Good. We like that. There's some promise in the chin, a few whiffs there, but I wouldn't really depend on that one. And the curve is not going to be this effective every time. So with that lower velocity, the lower win chance, I'm just not really in on Sean Burke. But hey, against the Tigers, am I overrating the Tigers? Have the Tigers just gotten worse? Are these cooling off? I don't know. But Sean Burke, to me, isn't really improving in the way that I need him to, unlike Shane Smith, who is actually gaining that velocity and really working more with his secondaries to improve as the season goes on. Robbie Ray, ace is going to ace. We were comparing it earlier in the stream. If you didn't know, I stream every single morning, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. on playback.tv. Sometimes it's 12:30 I start, but I'm always there. And Robbie Ray, of course, in the beginning of the year was very bad, but what he's been doing since April 26th onward is like a sub-2 ERA, sub-1 whip with a 31% K rate. It's remarkable. What is kind of wild is the big change then was a reduction in fastballs. He had this massive affinity for them. And he was neglecting his secondaries, all this stuff. Finally, he went back to the secondaries, through like 50% of fastballs after that. Good. This was 70% four-seamers again. Wait, what? Well, he was locating them super well. They were dominating. And then the other pitches worked really well. 5 for 9 whiffs on the changeup in this one. The slider was good. The curve was good. That's awesome. This was against the Padres too. So he was utilizing the secondaries well with the fastball. And that's all cool with me. Speaking of good fastballs, we have Ryan Pepiot going 6 innings of 200 runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 8 strikeouts. 11 over 54 whiffs on that one. And that's a ton of usage. Just getting close to 60% there. And the changeup went underneath it for 6 for 18 whiffs. The slider was around, though. And I think that's been the biggest question for me with Pepiot is how good is that slider going to be? Because the four-seamer is doing what it's supposed to do. The changeup is doing what it's supposed to do. But is this a devastating slider? Or is it a cutter? Or what should I expect here from this? Obviously, this was good. This was against the Rangers as well. 19 whiffs here overall. But that's, I think, the last piece of the puzzle. And, of course, just locating the changeup and four-seamer like this every game. That would be great, too. Slade Ciccone, he had an amazing outing. Well, not amazing, but it was much better than we expected against the Yankees in the Bronx. 5 innings, 200 runs, 5 hits, 2 walks, and 3 Ks. Yeah, that's not a good whip, 140, but we'll take that. That is your gold star for the day. And he now gets the Reds carpet. Do we trust Slade Ciccone in Cleveland against the Reds? I think we do. That's going to be a questionable start, believe it or not, just because it's that scenario. We have others to talk about. Casey Mize and David Peterson, Miles Michaelis, Zach Eflin, Dylan Cease, Grant Holmes, and so many more. And we'll talk about all of that after this break. Casey Mize against the White Sox. We thought this would be a really good one, but it wasn't. 4.2 innings of 200 runs, 10 base runners, 6 hits and 4 walks. My gosh, 3 strikeouts, just 4 whiffs, 23% CSW and 93 pitches against the White Sox. And it's 94-95. It was pretty much its season average. And I really want it to be 95 plus like it was in the spring. And the splitter in this one was bad. It was 7 over 16 strikes. He leaned in on the slurve, which is really a curve, but whatever. It went over the plate a lot, and it was generally effective for him. But that splitter not doing anything, it meant that the fastballs kept getting fouled off. And the slider, which was 8 for 10 strikes, with just one hit allowed, like, we'll take that, but it's not really a dominating pitch. This was Casey Mize just kind of laboring as he couldn't really find the thing during at-bats a lot. Like, he had to get into all these deeper counts, couldn't blow them away, just 4 whiffs. And the White Sox were able to mess him up a bit. I am not encouraged by Mize at the moment. Splitters are weird. What do you know? We're at 11. He gets the Orioles next. Maybe that's better. Maybe the lefty lineup that he has there really allows him to take a step forward with that splitter. Still, I think I am out for a start right now. He hasn't been himself since returning from the IL. And then he will get the Pirates after the Orioles one. So if you want, just like go for something else in the meantime. And he likely will still be around for the Pirates. David Peterson is, you know, it's funny. I lowered him on the list because I felt like I was just too high on him. And to be fair, I didn't want this start on my team, which is 7 innings, 3 runs, 7 hits, 2 walks, and 6 strikeouts. He didn't get a win. Yes, it's a quality start, but that's not a good ERA for you. It's not a good whip for you. And it was the Dodgers. And what really happened is he had a really tough inning, the 3rd inning. And then you just great otherwise. And the command, oh my gosh, amazing. Like the overall command was phenomenal from David Peterson. So this is the kind of guy I've been waiting for. And he located the 4-seamers up. The sinkers and changeups were arm side. The slider was down and glove side. Like, that's it. I hope he pulls it off. I mean, he should really against the Nationals. But then it'll be Atlanta and then the Phillies. And that's really the big, big test. If he's able to hold this kind of command and showcase that he now has figured out something and tweaked it. Oh, boy. I'm so very in. Miles Michaelis, it's a very dusty donut with a 6-inning performance of 300 runs, 8 hits, 1 walk, and just 2 strikeouts without a win. Oh, boy. So if you're in a quality start look league, sure, but VPQS. No, thank you. And it's Miles Michaelis for you. Zach Eflin got a poor quality start, 6 innings, 300 runs, 8 hits, 0 walks, 7 Ks with the win in Seattle. Hey, maybe the Orioles are waking up a little bit. He got 9 over 20 whiffs on the curve and sweeper. And generally, the command is what you expect of Eflin. And that's the whole thing with me on Eflin is I think Eflin's just a solid Toby, if not a low-end Holly, right? 7 Ks certainly suggest it. So I am in holding Eflin in your 12-teamers. I think the Orioles are going to continue to get wins for him. And also, he goes deep in games. I don't think the ratios should be bad for you. Jake Irvin is not feeling it, and we do not want to go after Jake Irvin. Cool. Awesome. Didn't do well against the Cubs. Dylan Cease had a 41% CSW for King Cole and 21 whiffs, which matches Robbie Ray and then is underneath Framber Valdez. This should be a normal Golden Goal night. And then he went five innings against the Giants of three earned runs, five hits, three walks, and seven Ks. Welcome to the life of Dylan Cease. I mean, it's so funny, too. He was so good against lefties. The slider was really awesome. He didn't make any mistakes over the plate with his four-seamer. And yeah, he threw some mistakes against, you know, against right-handers. Okay, but like, come on, man. It's so frustrating. Yes, he's still two-pitch. I think that does open the door a little bit for these moments, but I think it's really just more about his own ability and his command, and that's just how it is. Grant Holmes against the Diamondbacks, 3.1 innings, 300 runs, four hits, two walks, and four strikeouts. So it was pretty much a slider and four-seamer in this. Some cutters-ish and some curves, sure. And he was great through three, right? He faced the minimum in this. I believe it was one. Yeah, it was one hit. And what happens? All of a sudden, it's two walks and three straight hits before getting a strikeout, and then he gets pulled from the game. And the hits were all on his four-seamer. Of course they were. Because the slider's amazing. And yeah, I shouldn't have those two walks. Yep, slider's a part of that too, sure. But 52% usage with that slider. It was great. And it was 0 for 17 whiffs on the four-seamer that has called strikes and balls in play. But like, he didn't even throw badly spotted four-seamers too. They were really well located well to lefties. And he got a little bit unlucky. And I love that he actually attacked inside to lefties too with that four-seamer. With the cutter. But yeah, you gotta find a way to not throw so many four seamers, Grant Holmes. It's just, that's what it is. The slider is great and we're cool with it, but we gotta figure out the cutter and the curve and really get that in there, because you can't be pretty much going two pitch here because the four seamer just gets it too much. That's just what it is. So I see a potential breakout if he does change that. Still, it's there. I think it is. We haven't seen it. And I understand you just don't want to deal with it. Like, that makes all the sense. I think I'm going to roll with it against the Brewers, but I very much understand that you don't want to. That's in Milwaukee next. And I think that Atlanta is going to continue to win more games as well. So, yeah, I'm here for it. Brian Wu against the Orioles. He got pretty messed up by the long ball in this one. It was normal standard affair with the with his fastballs. And then he did have 15... sliders for 53% CSW and 4 for 15 whiffs, and he didn't actually locate it well. It just kind of showcases, man, if Brian Wu actually locates it, then he can throw it more than that and then probably keep guys off the home run long ball more. Six innings, four earned runs, four hits, two walks, six Ks. Just locate that slider better, and I think everything kind of works out. 89 mile per hour sliders when everyone is focused on those amazing four seamers and sinkers. Yeah, that should work. And yeah, one whip, by the way, to pretty much tell you why 400 runs equals home runs. Okay, Landon acted poorly against the Mets, and he is going to get the Padres twice now. You don't want that. Brandon Fott, you kind of don't want either. This was against Atlanta, three innings of 500 runs, five hits, two walks, and two strikeouts. The curveball did return against lefties, but it wasn't that good, and I don't really like the sinker over the plate to both lefties and righties. It wasn't really that bad for him. It was just, it kind of was a little bit, actually. It was just, it was frustrating, to, like, not really good command from Fott. And he only threw three sweepers. Now, here's the thing, though. There was more separation than we normally see between the curveball and the sweeper. And this curve had 81 mile per hour velocity, 81, 82. While the sweeper that he threw, the three of them, were 85. And this curveball had the same horizontal sweep, but then 16 inches more drop. Which is absurd, right? Like negative 8 to 8. So I get the deal being like, I want 16 inches of drop versus 4 miles per hour harder, right? That's what he's doing. And I think that's why the sweeper was thrown less. So I think that's okay with me, but the sweeper was so good though against the Rays that can't go away, right? Is this curveball that much better? I don't know. It's a little strange. 70% of the time with fastballs to right-handers is not it. I don't like that. So he gets the Jays and Mariners, not in that order, Mariners and Jays. So Fott, I don't want to go for this. You get them White Sox after that, but I don't want to start you against the Mariners hosting them. And then I don't want to go against the Jays, even though they are worse against righties and lefties. Like, lefties are the real terrifying thing for pitchers against the Jays. But the, yeah, I don't want to do Fott anyway, even as a righty against Jays. Okay, I've said way too much here. I'm so sorry. I'm stumbling. Cole Reagans, as I mentioned, not looking good. It was three runs in five in three innings of five earned runs. My gosh. And now against the Yankees, and I just don't want to do it. I want to give him one star to make sure everything is fine. Mitch Keller against the Astros, 6.1 innings of six runs, eight hits, one walk, and five Ks. And this is why I don't go after Mitch Keller. I just feel like the bad days are just very bad, and the good days are just not that good. Matthew Liberatore and David Festa round up this one, round out this podcast, I should say. The Athletics, 3.2 innings, eight earned runs, six hits, two walks, six Ks. That was David Festa's line at Sacra Verde against the Athletics. My apologies. The changeup was down for 7 over 25 whiffs, and that's cool, but then again, it didn't earn strikes. It was 40% strikes. So he did the job of having his changeup low, but he didn't have the job done with sliders and four-seamers setting it up. And, I don't want to go after Festa. I just don't trust that the command is actually good enough to really squeeze the most out of it. It doesn't mean that he can't be good. Like, we've seen him have successful outings despite not having the best command those nights, or maybe the command shows up for like one day. I am not buying into a proper breakout because I think he still hasn't flexed the ability to go four seamers up and change ups down and throw the slider the way that he wants in a given moment. But there are going to be those moments that you like him, and I get that. It's a shag rug. You guys know this. He's a hipster. Matthew Liberatore against the Royals did not do well. Four innings of 700 runs, eight hits, one walk, and two strikeouts. Okay, so Matthew Liberatore to me has been a guy who's had better than expected command and also throwing closer to 95 while embracing a bit of the slider and just kind of commanding well as a lefty to get out righties. The command was not there on the fastball at all. The secondaries caught so much of the plate. The changeup that I've been encouraged by went over 14 CSW, and that four-seamer, as I mentioned before, that didn't have good command was just a 53% strike rate. So the Jays are next. As I just mentioned, Jays are good against the lefties. I don't want Liberatore for that. And it might be the start of the decline because this was a little bit of a surprise how good of a Holly he's been. And I feel as if Liberatore really isn't absurdly good. You know, it's more of just command focused and it's going away now. And yes, he has a great defense behind him that has allowed him to be more of a command focused one and get those balls in play a bit more and get outs with it, but that only goes so far. And yeah, I don't feel like you need to hold on to Liberatore because I don't see like a top 25 starter potentially if everything clicks with him. That is it for today. Thank you all so much for your support. My name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.